Living, studying, and working in three different countries has shaped our next guest's eternal love for machines and technology. He is Manan Mehta. Manan is an embedded software engineer who is currently building autonomous vehicles at Argo AI. His morning routine includes masala chai and Bollywood music, and he believes that attitude and strategy can compensate for talent, but talent can never compensate for the other two. In today's episode, we talk about his journey after DJ, moving to the United States, studying in San Jose, and working for Argo AI. We also discuss his principles of leaving no stones unturned and learning through failures. If you know Manan, you already know he has tremendous stories to tell for everything. This episode is a really fun one.
So today we have with us Manan Mehta, and let's dive into our conversation to know more about his journey. Yep. I think I know Manan since first year of engineering. Yeah. And I think I met you because of Prerak. But yeah, it's been a fun journey from knowing from learning about your past from Nigeria to the broken Hindi to the crazy times in college, and now seeing you doing something something that you're so passionate about. It's amazing.
Yeah, I think, yeah, let's start directly dive into what Manan is doing right now. And yeah. I know you work for Argo. So like what exactly is your role? Because honestly, I haven't been able to catch up on that. Like, I honestly don't know what you're up to. So
yeah, I think we need to start meeting in places other than bars now, Tapan. I think that's where we will be able to discuss these things. Okay, so I'm an embedded software engineer at Argo AI, not to be confused with another big company known as Argo itself. Argo AI is basically a Pittsburgh-based robotics company that's trying to solve for self-driving cars. We are set up as a parts manufacturer, so it means that we tie up with various different car companies and provide them with the entire hardware, software stack required for self-driving cars. So currently, we are focused on Ford Motors and Volkswagen. Those are two biggest, so basically the investors that we have for our company.
The hardware and the software stack, what does that mean?
So a hardware stack is basically anything that's required from the hardware point of view. So you have your compute systems. Your compute systems could include your actual main computers, your sensing devices. Obviously, self-driving cars have tens of sensors in them. The software stack includes the autonomy stack. So basically the entire perception model, the detection, the things that actually make a self-driving car, make those decisions, but at the same time also make it perform, like actually actuate on those decisions. So what I mean is, if they see a road sign that says stop, it actually communicates to the car that, hey, there's a stop sign, you need to stop over here and brake at this particular period, something like that. So that's the entire thing that's required to make any car self-driving is what we are providing.
Got it. And then what's your role specifically in that?
Yeah, so I work in the embedded software team. I say embedded platforms in many of the places, but most of my role is a little bit on the software side of things. So when I'm trying to explain this entire work stream to a lot of folks, right, I always say that, okay, let's talk about the human nervous system, right? Because we are trying to replicate something similar, right? We are trying to replicate the human driver or try and do better than a human driver, if not the same, you know, something on those lines.
Yeah.
So you have a brain that does all the decision-making in your case, right? But your brain is not necessarily doing the actions. It's your muscles, right? Yeah. And the path between your brain and your muscle are your nerves and your spinal cord or things like that. So the brain is the autonomy side of things. I don't deal over there. I don't work on the autonomy side. So I don't make the decisions on that side. What I work is the spine of the system. So it's basically the major highway that goes from the autonomy side to everything else in the car. So any data that's coming from any of the sensors, it passes through our system. Any of the data that needs to be sent to the car passes through our system. But other than just being the highway for all these messages, just like your spinal cord, we also have like reflexes. So we make decisions on the fly as well, based on requirements that we have in our system. We are trying to create highly reliable, highly high performance computers, basically. So these computers, when I say high performance, they don't have like tremendous amount of compute power and tremendous amount of memory and things like that. They're still like restricted devices in terms of how much capabilities they have. But what they do they do that really well. So they're like highly specialized computers that do a limited number of tasks, but they do those tasks really, really, really well. And something like sub-seconds accuracy, so something like in microseconds or nanoseconds, even in certain cases.
Okay.
I hope that was not too detailed, but...
I think that was beautifully put.
Yeah.
And if we take a step back, like embedded engineering, right? Like, or embedded software. For me, when I try to explain it to, you know, like my wife, who's nowhere related to like software or anything, like when you press the button on the microwave for 30 seconds, it knows that it has to start at 30 seconds at certain temperature and then stop when it hits 30 seconds. So is that correct? Or there's more to it?
It definitely is very correct. So I always tell people that there is a huge domain in embedded systems, right? Like it can be as simple as a computer in your smart remote or your anything, any device that has smart in it would have a microcontroller in it for sure. Microwaves, yes. Washing machines, yes. But you can also go a little bit more complex, and that's also an embedded system. Complex in the sense you could have a monitor, you can have a television, even your mobile phone, actually. So your mobile phone, nowadays mobile phone, if I remember correctly, you would probably have 3 or 4 microcontrollers in it, and embedded software is, like you're always running an embedded software in these devices, because the idea of it, the idea of embedded systems is basically you're trying to take all the features and pack it into one single chip. You don't want a distributed system where you have one computer, then you have a motherboard which has the RAMs, which has a hard disk. No, you want one single chip, which is really tiny and has all these features in it. It's power efficient, things like that. So yeah, you're pretty much on the point for one of the things that embedded software covers.
Oh, this is the first time I know so much about embedded. I mean, I've heard so much about embedded system. Finally, getting clarity to what you have been working on. But I think having known you in college, I mean, embedded system was not something that you were very, very interested in. Like, what made you transition from?
Yeah.
So... And just to interrupt, sorry, Manan, but like as you were talking, I was thinking like in college, I honestly thought Manan will be hosting events or like doing something on the.
Probably have his own podcast at this point.
So I'm going to go a little further back, and I'm going to do something that's very classic, Manan, is that go back to my stories in Nigeria, right? So growing up in Nigeria. Yeah, because a big part, like, you know, I don't know if, is it because I'm, you know, closing on, like I'm getting closer to the age of 30 that I'm getting to connect a lot of my past together as to who, you know, what made me who I am, but when I was in Nigeria, I had a lot of hands-on experience with systems and machines and things that did not, like a normal kid probably wouldn't. The reason is because I was working on generators that would probably fill, I've seen Hiloni's living room, right? Your entire living room plus your bedroom would be the size of a generator. And my dad and I at midnight, we would actually go into the generator room and fix things. Because the generator spoiled and there's no electricity and there's no electrician coming at 12 in the night for you in Nigeria. It started off over there. Then my dad was dad is a very hands-on guy. He likes doing things on his own. So even I would participate in it. I remember this one instance, my mother's friend's tire got punctured. Her car's tired. Car tire got punctured. And my mom just said that, hey, can you just go and talk to the security guy and help him out? I did not really understand what she meant. And I just went and did it myself. I just went and changed the entire tire. The security guy was just helping me do the heavy lifting, the tires and things like that. But I've always been a very hands-on guy. And with working with all these machines, working with generators, working with cars, I used to help my dad change like simple things on the car, like checking if the oils are, you know, the oil is good or whether, you know, the engine is working as anticipated or corrected or things like that. It just got me very interested in machines in general. And then I had a couple of internships doing DJ. I don't know how many of you were aware of it, but I had one internship back in Ahmedabad where I was working with some of these large machines. And I really got like something like a click that, okay, this is something I want to do. I want to work in factories. I want to work with big machines. I was working with PLCs, which are programmable logical controllers. They are like huge microcontrollers, industrial grade. And I said, yeah, this is something I want to do. I then had another internship back in Nigeria where I was working on a bottling line and I did something similar. And I had so many stories of what I did over there, how things were very dirty. I had 7-Up all over my shoes on one instance because no one knew that you should turn off the tap before cleaning the sensors, things like that. So long story short, I got really interested in this entire world of industrial computers and things that work at these high performance situations. All right. So once I got into that domain, I came back to DJ. I was for my, you know, like my last 2 years, I had courses in microcontrollers, microprocessors, and someone handed me this book. It was a senior from DJ handed me this book by Mazidi that was only on microprocessors and microcontrollers. And I was smitten by the content of it. Like I said that, yeah, this content is what I like. This is what I enjoy. And Prasad Joshi was actually teaching that, you know, Professor Joshi from the HOD of electronics department. He was teaching this courses for, I think, the 7th and 8th semester or so. And I love that entire domain. But I still did not know at that point that I wanted to do a master's in this. So I did what most people would call stupid. I did not pick up a job from campus. I did get one, but I didn't pick it up. I told the HR that I'm sick for almost a month and a half before I finally rejected it while I was looking for a job. I did not go for a master's, although I had a GRE score and all taken care of. But I said, okay, let's just wait back. Let's try and find out what's in it. I think that was a little stupid back then because not having a job, not having any future plans, it was a little difficult back then. But I stayed back in India. I found a job through Naukri.com and some other websites I was using. I got a job at a startup company where thankfully I was working on embedded systems again. So I was building a lot of embedded systems over there. I learned a lot from the seniors. I learned some key skills, such as programming a microcontroller, setting up a microcontroller, building an embedded system. And I think the most important of it all was actually how to Google things, trying to build stuff, you know? So I basically got into all of these, tens of things, right? From fixing a generator at midnight to getting that job in India, kind of just laid the path of working with machines such as like cars and computers such as microcontrollers, basically. So got too much into those domains.
Would you recommend anyone to do that? Like not join?
Stay back?
Not join the campus job and also stay back, yeah. Both of them. Yeah, I think will be two separate points, but yeah.
Yeah, so I think I would always recommend or suggest people to explore. Do not fall into this entire system where there are expectations set by different people outside of you. So that could even be like your family, it could be your friends. Don't look at all of that. Just ask yourself that, what do you want to do? Because at the end of the day, you're going to be doing this for God knows how long, right? Like whether you start a company or you start a job, you're going to be doing this for at least 15, 20, 25 years. You could change fields later, but I didn't want to go to another school and another university to learn something again. So if you don't know, like in my case, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do a master's in. I stayed back and I think my cousin, who's a very dear mentor to me, Kinnari, I was sitting on a sofa in Mumbai, a month and a half prior to graduation from fourth semester. She was visiting, I think it was 2013, 2014, around that time. And I just told her that who's going to give me a job in India? Like, I don't have the key skills. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. A lot of my friends are going for their masters. That would be your best opportunity, right? Like, go for a master's. You learn something over there and you'll probably get a job by going through the system. And she was like, she was in Gujarati, she said that kem namade, you know, like you're a metta, you're going to get it. Just stay back. Don't, if you don't know what to do, if you think you don't have the key skills, don't rush into things. Just take your time, learn the things that you need to and come later. And that actually has been the differentiation that I think that has been the biggest delta between me and other candidates that came in for masters directly. For these roles that I was applying for. Because what I do at Argo is a lot more depth in it in terms of how much more technical stuff I need to know. But the width of the field, like getting to know the upper layer that, okay, what are the different silos that things are in? I got to learn that in my 2 years in India. Something like that. And it was not easy. Like getting a job in India, you need to have like a lot of, I'm trying to find the right words because, but you need to have the guts for it because I've actually been, there was one interview where I was told that take this engineering degree and give it back to Mumbai University because you don't belong in this field or you don't belong. in this domain. So that was one interview. Another interview, the guy just laughed and left the table middle of the conversation, which this thing's never happened with me over here, like however dumb answers I give in the US. But in India, this is what really happened. And then at the third company, I had prepared a lot. I studied a lot. I actually picked up not just TechMax, but I picked up other reference books also that I had to just like get enough to interview. You know, I was like, I'll figure out the things later at the job, but let me at least interview well enough. So picked up some books. It took me like 4 months after I graduated. We graduated somewhere around June. I got my job around November of that year. So somewhere around 4 months. And yeah, one guy even told me that, how can you go for a master's when you don't know how a Raspberry Pi works? I was like, okay, I mean, I'll figure that out. But he's like, no, but you don't know how Raspberry Pi works. You want to go into embedded systems and you don't know. How are you going to go for a master's right now? So those things are very encouraging to me.
I think also your journey with the job that was in India wasn't that cakewalk. Like I remember you traveling in the randomest vehicles, which I don't think you've ever taken, and the way you used to kind of work around it, go for like trips to like different towns and whatnot you used to do.
Yep. I remember telling my mom and dad. So that year when I was coming back from Nigeria after my final year, we got very lucky. We got a free upgrade on Emirates Business Class. And the moment I got this job, I was actually traveling around in an ST bus somewhere in Andhra Pradesh that I can't even pronounce the name as yet. And I told my dad that, hey, I just went from a business class at Emirates on a Airbus 380 to an ST bus somewhere in Andhra Pradesh going on my way to Telangana right now. And how interesting is that? And yeah, so the job had a lot of traveling in it. The company was basically in the edtech space that people would like to call it now. We were building a lot of projects, but in order to build those projects, we used to go to various places, hold workshops to make money off of it, go for exhibitions, go for presentations, go for training other people. I remember training a bunch of PhD guys with a bachelor's degree, and I was like, really, I'm training PhD folks? But I realized that in the field of education, that everyone, even amongst the four of us, there's going to be something that either each of us is going to be great at, the other person has no information on. So I was traveling and trying to explore that particular field. And that was where I learned the ABCDs of embedded systems. And yeah, I got a lot of time to read while traveling. So did a lot of that.
And so when did you decide that you want to go for your master's, and like what was the tipping point for that?
So I applied each year so I didn't apply the first year when I graduated. I applied the year after that, and they applied the year after that as well. The first year that I applied, I think a lot of people had a heartbreak when I told them that I'm not going for my master's right now. I felt that I was ready in terms of, like, I was always ready mentally and physically because I've always lived away from family. I've always lived, I've been living away from family since I was, 16 or so. And I've been living in different countries throughout my life. Like, this is the fourth country now that I'm in. Fourth country that I'm in now. So I was always okay with that mentally. Physically also was fine. I mean, I can travel. That's not an issue. But technically, I felt that there was more for me to learn in this 6 months that would set me up for my master's a little better. Like, I hate not knowing what to do at a job. And I didn't want a situation where I'm not able to I'm not confident enough about what embedded software is. So I decided to stay back for another year. And then I was like, yeah, fine. If I don't go now, I'm pretty sure people are going to get upset. And I think I've had enough of the not so great pay, the extremely long hours. I was probably clocking close to 60 to 65 hours a week working in India, getting paid far less than what we probably make over here in an hour also maybe, or maybe a day. So I was like, yeah, fine. This is it now. This is where I draw the line. So let's go now.
And but then how did you choose San Jose? How many colleges did you apply to?
I applied to quite a few, actually. San Jose State was my safe university. So there's this very good friend of mine, Ravi Vanjara. He was studying over here, and he's amongst the few that I mentioned that works in a similar space, right? And I had like lots of long calls with him throughout this entire decision making about San Jose State. I had other universities as well, but the unique selling point that I had at San Jose State was that not only was I doing a master's in computer engineering with a focus in embedded systems, but it was a focus in automotive application. I love cars. I have grown up around like different cars. Like my dad would have multiple different cars through the office. I would play around with forklifts, trailers. I would always, anything, any kind of vehicle that would have tires and move around, I was playing around with it back in Nigeria. So I just got interested in that. And to be honest, for embedded systems, there are a lot of good universities, but there were not that many that I knew back then. Even at this point, if I was told that, okay, you can go back to any university that you want to, I think amongst there would probably be three universities over San Jose State that I might go to, of which only one I might actually like say that, yeah, fine, I'll go here. One would be Carnegie Mellon. The other would be, I think it's UPenn that has a course in embedded systems specifically, and they take only 30 people every year, and then obviously Stanford. So I think San Jose State was a very good decision in hindsight, for me at least. It may not work for everyone, but for me.
Did you also consider like it being close to the Silicon Valley being a upside for you?
Yeah, so I think that's a very strong feeling that I had, and only you would know that because you've known me for this long now, Eleni, is that I did not want to come to the US. I wanted to come to California. I always had that in mind. I saw myself, I don't do any of those things, but I saw myself surfing somewhere in San Diego, having a convertible, driving around Pacific Road 1. So I knew that I always wanted to come to California at some point. San Jose State was not part of the decision making. Yes, the fact that I would have immense amount of opportunities around me was definitely a plus factor. I don't think I've seen anyone in the computer engineering and software engineering department struggle for phone calls, which is very important for interviews. Everyone gets phone calls. Converting is upon everyone's skills, but phone calls was never a problem. And I know friends that were at quite a lot of top institutes that struggle just with that first barrier, that when do we get the phone calls? Because you need to understand, a lot of companies do not want to pay for you to be relocated. They don't want to pay for you to be transporting you. They don't want to be paying for, they don't want to be traveling to another university to hold these career fairs. So San Jose State is like, if I walk within like 5 or 10 kilometer radius from my university, you'll probably find close to 500 to 1,000 companies in that area. And I was like, okay, one Indian software engineer from DJ Sangvi would probably get a job in one of these companies. So I thought that, yeah, that's definitely a plus point.
How did you apply for Argo? And did you work for other company or internships did you have during your master's?
Yes. Yeah. So throughout my master's, as I mentioned, right, like we have a focus in automotive and embedded software. So I did all my projects in automotive stuff because I said that why struggle and do something that I don't enjoy, rather do something that I actually enjoy creating. So I started writing a lot of embedded, I started creating a lot of embedded systems project related to cars, not necessarily self-driving cars, but different projects. So one project was like in self-navigating cars. So I had a car could go from point A to point B with a lot of sensors that are similar, not the same as a self-driving car. That project got a lot of traction on LinkedIn and YouTube and through the university. Another project I had was on a PID control steering wheel. So how we have a steering wheel, like when you're driving it, it goes back into a regular position or something like that. Like you're trying to like error check that the angle that you want to turn the steering wheel, it actually goes to that angle. So these are some projects I did. Another project was like reading things off of the CAN bus of a car. So I basically did a lot of car-based projects. I did not get an internship in a car-based company though, like automotive space. I got it at Intel, which was brilliant because I got to know what I didn't want to do at Intel. I knew that Intel is an amazing company. The opportunities I got at Intel was amazing. My manager was brilliant. Got to learn a lot of software stuff. Like Intel was very software intensive for me. I think I spent 3 weeks prior to my internship started doing lead code and doing like after getting the job, I was doing lead code, HackerRank, doing various tutorials online because my manager told me that, hey, you know embedded systems, but this job is going to be very software focused because a company like Intel is quite big, right? So they have a lot of layers between the person who actually writes the code to the person who actually integrates the code. And everything in between is probably some other team or some other department because that's a lot more efficient. but I am a young engineer and I don't like someone else doing stuff for me. So I wanted to do the entire stack on my own. So I knew at Intel that I want to go to a startup company, just like I did back in Mumbai, because I could do everything, right? From writing the code that turns the car to soldering the pins on a chip that probably burned off for testing or something like that. So I wanted the entire stack and the entire experience, 360 degrees kind of thing. So to come to Argo, to come to your question that you mentioned was, I was trying everything. I probably applied to 800 and something companies during my internship. These are just the official numbers that I kept on an Excel sheet. I lost track after a point. I was like, why am I maintaining an Excel sheet? I don't know. But I had 800 and something on two Excel sheets that I had, and probably like almost like four, five, six different things that I would keep doing, right? Like I'll keep doing different things. Like my resumes were a bunch. Like I had company-based resumes as well as then divided into role-based resumes as well. So I was spending so much of time with my computer that I kept doing various different things. I've even gone on Google Map, zoomed out, see all the companies around me, open their website, and if they don't have a careers page, take the help at their company's page, send them a resume. Hey, I'm looking for a job. Do you have one by any chance? I'm really interested. And one of my friends actually got a job through that. We were on Twitter, we were on LinkedIn. My roommates and I, we did everything possible, no stones unturned. And then this is something that I think some of you might be aware of, that I was in India for my Gordana. And then Zalak and I had a little bit of an issue with her visas and something to do with the Murats, that you cannot have something before Holi or something like that. So we had to have my Gordana on the same day as a career fair somewhere in San Francisco. My friend had told me this about 6-8 months back. There's a career fair. We should go. We don't know if we'll have a job by then. I was certain we will not get a job by then, and we need to go for this career fair. So Zalak did not have any plans of being there for the Gordana because of her visa situation. And I was only going to be there at my Gordana, and she was going to like remote in through Zoom or Skype or something. And I was at the airport at immigration. My phone is ringing nonstop because I have to go back for the career fair. And I cleared immigration. Zalak is like, hey, I'm like, what? I'm at the immigration. Stop like calling so much, right? Like, what's the guy going to think that I'm doing something wrong? But she's like, hey, my visa got approved. I'm taking the next flight out. I was like, oh, so should I be waiting? She's like, it's our Gordana. I mean, what do you want to do? And I had two career fairs. I had no job. I had some leads. I had the offer from Intel almost there, but I told you, right? Like I knew what I didn't want to do kind of thing. So I took the call at that point at the airport. I was like, you just carry on with the Gordana. I'll be there in spirit as well as over FaceTime. And I'm going back to San Jose for these career fairs. I did the first career fair at my university, which has a different story to it entirely. Like my university does not have a career fair open to all, like not all students. You get a lottery system to go to a career fair at your own university.
What? So,
yes.
Was it like that crowded or that many students?
I think the university just couldn't handle the size of the number of companies coming in and the number of people applying. So it was always going to be a challenge. I don't know the exact things behind it, reasons. And I was okay with it also to some extent because I now knew what companies I didn't want to apply for, right? So most of the companies that were sponsoring were usually like bigger firms that had the capacity to actually sponsor for someone, for H1B basically. Before someone misunderstands the sponsorship. But yeah, so that was the idea. And so I was like, okay, fine. I'll still go for the career fair. I finally got my first lottery ticket in the final semester. Let's see what my university's career fair is. Of the 40-something companies that came over there, probably there were only 5 that really sponsored. And there were only 3 that was actually in the domain that I was in. So I didn't have much of work that day. I came back home. I got one call from the career fair at a company in the same automotive space. Not a very good experience with them in interviewing. And I figured that the kind of people that were interviewing me were probably not at the same wavelength. Nothing wrong with them, but it was just something I knew that when I was interviewing them, like you need to know that when you're interviewing, you're also interviewing the company. And I knew that that was not going to be a fit for me. So despite their offer and the interview, I opted not to go there. The second interview was where I met the second career fair was where I met Argo. That also had a long story behind it, like everything else. It was, we had to go to an event. I think it was jobfairs.com or jobfairs something. They hold basically job fairs across the United States in collaboration with other institutes or other organizations. So this, they had collaborated in San Francisco for an event called Lesbians Who Tech. So we were supposed to go to that event, and it was supposed to, we had to leave at 5 a.m. so that we could get our IDs in time. Otherwise you don't get entry. I was exhausted. I'd just come back from India. I was working both at Intel at that particular point. I was completing assignments. Like literally I landed from India on maybe, I think a Tuesday afternoon. And I was doing my assignment for my GPU architecture class until maybe midnight or so. So I was really exhausted that entire week. And I was working as well at Intel. So at 5 o'clock, I was like, I can't really do this. It's not worth it. I don't even know if career fairs are going to work, because the first career fair I went at my university was not that great either. And other career fairs did not work out well for me in the past. But there's this other thing that another cousin of mine, this amazing cousin Neha, mentioned that Manan, again in Gujarati, but tane kase pan javano hoy for a career fair, go. Like whether it's a flight ticket, whether it's a bus ticket, whether you're to change countries, if there's an opportunity that you see that you think that that's something that could get you a good opportunity, don't go away from it. And that's what rang in my head at 5 a.m. in the morning. And I know that. And my roommates were pestering me because I was the only one with a license at that point. So we drove down to San Francisco, went to an event called Lesbians Who Tech, went to all the companies over there, and I was superly disappointed. They were all software roles. So of the 4 roommates, 3 of us went for sightseeing. We saw San Francisco again, saw different parts of it. My 4th roommate is like, no, I'm going to apply at every company. I'm like, they're not going to give you a job. You're a computer engineer going and applying at Okta and Yahoo. I was like, they're software-based companies. He's like, yeah, it's fine. I'll figure it out. I'll learn Java if it's required. I'll learn C# if it's required, but I'm applying. And we're roaming around grabbing burgers and grabbing a couple of beers somewhere. And then all of a sudden, my friend calls me back that, hey, Manan, we were actually in the wrong career fair section. The hardware is across the street. Oh, and no. We ran like crazy. We dropped everything that we had. We ran going from that sightseeing touristy mode with our cameras out front. We had LinkedIn on our phone and going across the entire hardware section. And that's when I met Argo. It was a different thing. I still remember it because Argo had probably the most, it had one of the plainest desk setup. So that was something that attracted me over there, kind of thing. Not too showy. It had like a regular table with a banner, something that we did during DJ Sangri's days, you know, right. Like those banners that you reutilize time and time. There's something like that. There was one lady over there. She still is at Argo. And I always still tell her that you are the reason why I'm here. And I went and spoke with her. There was no rush over there because Argo was not a well-known company back then. Back then, it was a company that had a lot of money, but was still very young because we were paying it low key, basically. So yeah, I was at the career fair. I was in lines with all these companies, and my Gordana was that night itself. So I had to be back home at a particular time because, well, it's my Gordana. Right. I have to be there in some capacity. So Argo, I went to Argo. I spoke with the lady. I told her my background. I told her I'm at Intel, but I want to do things in this domain. I showed her my project. So I went on YouTube. I showed her my project that, hey, this is my project. See if you're interested in this. She took a picture of my resume back then. But something that I will tell people to do during these career fairs is that don't take that as a positive sign, because I have been on the other side of the desk. I've been part of the career fairs on the other side, and we do take photos. But there are so many resumes you are going through, it's not possible to remember each and every one. So you either say something that gets you extremely on the top map for them, extremely on the target, which I knew I wouldn't be able to do. Second thing is, go and apply again and connect with them on LinkedIn and then start following the company as soon as possible. So then and there I applied. I had my resume with me on my phone. I applied at the company. In the tag, they said that, how do you know about Argo? I actually put that HR's name that was there. So I don't know if they thought of it as a referral or something, but I put that HR's name over there and I mentioned the career fair that I was in. And I did this for all the companies over there. Like Argo it was not something special I did for Argo alone. I did that for all companies over there. There were about 16, 17 companies. And that was a Saturday. I had my Gordana in the evening. And then it was maybe Monday. I was sitting in my roommate's room. We were grabbing coffee or something in the morning. And the phone just rang up. This is Argo. We want to talk to you. And I was like, damn, I can't mess this up. This is the opportunity I want because A, it's in cars. I love cars. B, embedded software. I mean, that's what I'm trying to do. And third, I would actually be able to be a developer.
Wow. So, yeah. That was so concise.
Very concise. Like everything with me, it's never concise. I know that. But yeah, my interview, if that's something that you're curious about as well, was that the interview process that I had at Argo was also amazing. I had 2 phone calls. I had 5 on-sites. I then had 1 return call by the manager to come and meet in person after my on-sites. And after I had my offer in my hand, I was taken out for dinner with the director of the hardware team, because that time embedded software was under the hardware organization. And they answered everything. Like this, Argo was not small at that point. Argo was a very big company already by then. It's just that people didn't know about it. They had around 270 employees. They had $1 billion in funding. They had something on the road. It was not like something that they're still trying to do. So it was already a big company. For them to take the time to interview me, spend the time to take me out for dinner at a nice place, answer all the questions I had, was very crucial in me making this decision.
So how do you continue to learn, stay on top of your things within your role?
I think mentors, I think there are like multiple legs to this particular chair. One is mentors. I got some amazing guys at Argo, Colin and Eugene, that these are senior engineers that would comment very regularly on my PRs. Like we have this culture that anything you create at Argo is reviewed not just by your team members, but your manager, external teams, even sometimes your CEO and CTO would review your stuff, and you have to be on the top of your game to answer those questions. So because of that, they would always leave helpful links for me that, hey, have you tried this out? Or do you know about this concept? Do you do this? So mentors was a very big way for me to learn or get up to speed with how Argo does things. Other than that, I think there's a second leg is actually, this is very surprising, but yes, I do read technical papers at times. So I never thought of myself ever when I was in DJ that I'll ever read technical papers. But honestly, I do now, because there's certain concepts that are they're much more in details in these research papers that you'll probably find elsewhere. So we have IEEE's membership through our company. So we keep reading those research papers. Another way is blogs. I cannot emphasize enough what people do for free in this world, in this domain. I mean, Tapan has a blog and your newsletter that I follow. That's like so much of information over there, right? Like I feel bad at times. I don't read books, but then I feel like, but I'm reading Tapan's thing. He'll probably do everything for me and just like post things for me. So similarly, a lot of people have created great blogs on Medium, on their own websites, on different concepts. So anytime I read a word in a research paper or in work, I just Google it up. As I said, Googling is very important. Find those blogs, read those blogs. And some of my mentors gave me leads to these amazing authors or amazing people who write stuff about embedded systems. And I think this is something that even Tapan mentioned, right? Like that, in case if someone is writing about it in a professional sense or in the sense that they are publishing it somewhere, they have spent time reviewing it, building something that's actually good and true for their readers. And that's another way. And third is books. I read way more embedded system related books than I do anything else. I don't read books in general quite a bit. That's bad. But I actually do read a lot of embedded systems book. I still do, but I did a lot more during the start. In fact, there's this book known as Making Embedded Systems by Alicia White. If I read that book, I'll feel like that's like a kid's book now. Like it's a very basic, small concepts. But anyone who wants to go into embedded systems should read that book at least once. It's gives you a lot of concepts in very small, concise manner and gets you excited about very small things such as a motor spinning or an LED blinking, things like that. So that's how I keep up and learn. Yeah, like, you know, there's this thing, leave no stone unturned. I mean, if you're genuinely interested in learning something, you're not going to leave a stone unturned. You're going to find a different way of doing things. Even like off late, I was listening to different of these podcasts, you know, at What the Hat. I see a lot of our people from different companies doing different things. I start Googling what that company is doing and how embedded software is impacting that company's product, because that's my way of gauging whether I want to be in that company for those kind of roles or not. So even in the field of AR and VR, right, those domains are pretty useless without embedded systems in place, because that's the embedded systems is what's going to actually build their hardware interface. That's going to build the systems around it. So it's kind of nice to then go and read about a different blog, which will talk about how embedded software is impacting AR, VR, and you learn skills in that domain. And there are a lot of translative, skills that can actually be transferred from one domain to the other in embedded systems.
If you wanted to give one advice to your younger self, what would it be?
Yeah, I thought about that quite a bit. You know, it's like, what is something that I'll tell myself? I think I wouldn't want to change anything that I have right now. I think I'm pretty happy because I would say just fail a lot earlier and fail a lot more quicker. Fail at things. Don't be afraid to fail, in the sense that that has been my biggest way of learning. I learn through failures. That where I found that where others get motivated, demotivated when they fail, or demotivated when they get criticized, I actually feel the opposite. Actually, in case if someone says you can't do this, I'm like, why? I mean, why would you do that to me? I mean, I can do it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with me. I probably have the skills somewhere. So if I am to go back, I would probably say that fail fast, make things, break things. Don't stop because you're scared at attempting at something.
Let's move on to our next segment. It's called the top three. And yes. The first thing that we'd ask you is, I know you're not an avid reader otherwise, but if there are any top three favorite book of yours, and there is one book that you kind of give the most.
For sure. So Rich Dad, Poor Dad is, I think, the first book I picked up in the financial space, because I was like, okay, I want to make, like, the whole reason why we all work is that at the end, we want to make some money, right? We want to save some money to buy what we want to buy, or we want to leave money for the next generation, or we want to do something. So Rich Dad, Poor Dad was a book, but surprisingly, that book has a lot of things that can apply elsewhere as well. So Rich Dad, Poor Dad is one. Another one was something I read back in my literature class in high school, was 1984 by George Orwell. I love that book. I think it's important that people read this book, especially if they're into, I think we're in this new world where so much of information is no longer private. And 1984 is a very good book, very well written. A lot of things in it we will not probably understand on day one, but because it was part of my literature class, the professor actually helped us break down things, and I was amazed. And another one is Brotopia that I recently read. Brotopia is one book that actually Zalak, my wife, actually handed over to me. And I think it's an important book, in the sense that there is a huge gap, or you don't see enough representation in the Bay Area and in tech companies in general in terms of gender. So most companies tend to have a lot more male software engineers as compared to female software engineers, or even in other roles in tech space. And Argo has really been trying to, like, you know, address this issue, but I think we can only address this issue if we know exactly where the problem lies. And for me to do that, this book was one way, like, you know, trying to find out. And one I've actually recently been gifting quite a bit is The Bogglehead. I forgot the entire title of the name, but
Bogglehead Guide to Investing.
Yes, exactly. So the reason for that is because I learned a lot of my investing through, blogs and YouTube videos. And I've been investing in Robinhood and Stash for the last, like, maybe 2.5 years now.
Congratulations.
That. Thank you. I've been doing that for a while now, and I learned a lot of the concepts on the fly through YouTube and book. But I then found all those concepts in one single book, and that's The Bogglehead. So I was like, why go around tens and thousands of blogs when you can just get in one book?
So that's, by the way, Atit also has a blog on investment, a newsletter. It's called
Is it the Gujarati dollar?
No.
Atit has a newsletter as well called Cold Brew. And then we have a podcast, if you haven't heard. It's called Cold Brew Money. We talk about finance because your friends and family both.
I'm actually on the episode where you speak about moats. I haven't been able to, like, track each and every episode till late. Keep up the work on that. I'm listening.
Awesome. So speaking of podcasts and YouTube channels, top three podcast YouTube channel recommendations.
Quite a lot. I'm actually going to go three for each of them, because I like talking. So podcast, Planet Money, speaks a lot about economics, very important for people who want to understand how the world works outside of engineering. How I Build This by Guy Raz, that's been a recent favorite. This guy, man, I don't know what it is. It's his voice, it's the content he generates. It's brilliant. Like, you get to get a lot of hopeful stories, especially if you want, the first good episode you want to listen on this is the one by Dyson, Sir Dyson. I forgot his first name. But How I Build This, definitely. Another one is Smart Passive Income by Pat Flynn. That's been something that not all of it applies to me because I'm not really in this digital space as yet, but I think it's good information to have. That's podcast. YouTube channel, as I mentioned, I like cars quite a bit. So one of them is by Doug DeMuro. He reviews different cars from different times, different ages. It gets you to see what technology has evolved, both mechanically, electrically, and software-wise. Another person is Matt's Off-Road Recovery. So this is actually very weird. I never thought I would be excited by this concept, but this guy goes around US trying to recover cars that have been stuck in a ditch, stuck in some sand trap. He just tows the car out. But there's something oddly satisfying about the way he gets these cars out of these places. And there was once a car was stuck, like 3/4 of the car was already in a hole, and he got the car out. It was crazy. Another one I've loved, and I really want this guy to create more content, is Johnny Harris. Johnny Harris is a Vox. He creates a lot of context for Vox Media, but he's been creating on his personal channel as well. And Johnny Harris has some beautiful stories. I love history and geography, and the guy does an amazing job. Like he spoke an entire episode of why the borderlines between Canada and US are the way they are. Like, they're straight lines, and then there are these weird curves, and then again they're straight lines. And I was like, really? Did you get me interested in a borderline? I loved it. I love this guy.
Love Johnny Harris and his wife as well, Lizzie. Both of them are amazing. They did an entire episode about Coke in Mexico. So apparently Coke in Mexico is different than Coke anywhere else because they use actual cane sugar.
Oh, so that actually applies to Coke even in India. So in US, a fun fact is that long back, to get the farmers some more help, agriculturally speaking, they subsidize high fructose corn syrup quite a bit. So they started changing all the sweet, the sweet comes from the corn rather than your actual sugar. So I know a lot of people that like the Coke from anywhere across the world as compared to the US because of this reason. It's not just Coke. It actually has to do with the chocolates. I do not like the Kit Kat over here. I love Kit Kat back in India. I like Kit Kat elsewhere. I go to the Indian store to actually look if that Kit Kat has arrived because those Kit Kats are way, like, they're far superior compared to what you get over here.
Top three movies and TV shows.
Perfect. Okay, so coming to documentaries first. Yeah. This documentary shaped my shaped a lot of my perspective as to why I want to get into self-driving space and cars in general, is Who Killed the Electric Car and The Revenge of the Electric Car. Fun fact, the first electric car was sometime in the 70s, if I'm not wrong. And it was a huge hit. And for reasons that the documentary leaves unstated, or you would probably get a feel as to why it was then discontinued. And if I am not wrong, Tesla actually started with this reason itself, that the three original founders, I think none of them are with the company now, I don't know, but the three original founders actually were inspired by that entire push, that entire electric car, and they want to start that. They want to start that right now. So that's on that. TV shows, movies, anything that Alan Sorkin writes, he's a beautiful historian when it comes to writing. He writes beautifully. Two of his most noble works have been West Wing and Newsroom in the TV space. Movie-wise, it makes Moneyball. He made The Social Network. He made Steve Jobs, the other one, not the one with Ashton Kutcher in it. And beautiful writer. Recently, I finished Queen's Gambit. That was also beautiful. Very well made. There are a lot of things. If people haven't watched it, you should. And please, if you're deterred by the chess and the initial episode, which I've heard some people on Reddit say, please don't be deterred. Please just power through the first episode if you can. It's really well written. And the last is The Boys on Amazon Prime. Because, I mean, it's superheroes in political space. What could go wrong? I mean, so it's pretty cool. So The Boys, yeah.
Did you watch The Trial of Chicago 7? That's by Aaron Sorkin as well.
Yes, that's Aaron Sorkin as well. So that's on my list for a while. I've actually been trying to finish Queen's Gambit first. And I like watching movies on the weekend, so I don't get interrupted. But let's see, next weekend maybe.